Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Harkins and Spiegel Show Flashback.
Tim Anderson, Bears fans wanted me to ask you this question. I know you're a Bama guy. Mac Jones, you think he's legit as an NFL player?
I think he can pan out. He had a great season. We only seen 1 year, and that 1 year we seen was impressive. So just imagine when he does get to the NFL, how much he can learn, and how much he can learn from other guys, and how much he can learn from all the coaches that have been there. So, I mean, the sky's the limit at that point.
Jones scanning the field. Lobs one, Devontae Smith. Touchdown, Alabama.
I don't know. You would know better than me, but just, like, all those guys on that line and running back and a couple of first-round picks at receiver, I'm like, anybody could look good.
Yeah, that definitely is tough. You know, I ain't just the best scout for football, but it's definitely tough. Those guys big, man. It's definitely different. But from what I see, just from how I scout, I think he'll be good.
Hey, listen, that's enough for me.
Well protected again. Jones waddles. Gets behind the defenders for another touchdown.
What a throw.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Thank you for hanging out, Parkins and Spiegel on the Score. You know, it's an excellent point that Chris Tannehill makes as we get ready to welcome in a real NFL draft analyst and expert, Dan Brugler from The Athletic, Spiegs, is Tim Anderson is the shortstop of the White Sox. Like, I can only ask him so many questions about scouting Alabama's quarterback, Mac Jones. I should probably ask someone who actually knows. It's a good idea by Tim Anderson. He makes a valiant point.
Hey, Tim Anderson is a good hitter, a fine shortstop, pretty decent NFL scout. Could probably talk basketball if you want. He knows pasta. He's a malleable man. But we've been looking for an expert. We've been looking for somebody truly, truly dialed in so we can talk quarterbacks, among other things.
Dan Brugler covers the NFL draft for The Athletic. He's on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park. Dan, we appreciate the time very much. All right, so expand on Tim Anderson's scouting report of Mac Jones, if you possibly can. Is the Alabama quarterback legit and worthy of the third overall pick in the draft?
Yeah, I thought he did a nice job. With Mac Jones, it's a tough conversation because, okay, let's just break it down with what are the two most important traits at the quarterback position. It starts with accuracy, starts with decision-making. You can make the argument that, okay, let's just, you know, Trevor Lawrence is going one, Zach Wilson is going two. You can make the argument that Mac Jones is the leader in the clubhouse with among the other three quarterbacks, with Justin Fields, Trey Lance, in those two areas. And then you just have to decide, okay, is he good enough in those other areas, talking about mobility, arm strength, all the other variables that it takes to play the position at a high level. But he's got the first two, the processing, the anticipation. But I think the overall point about the Alabama offense is certainly valid. When you talk about the situation he was in, it doesn't get much more perfect than that. The running game, the offensive line, a Heisman receiver, another first round receiver on the other side. And then the play calling, with Coach Sark, now the head man at the Texas Longhorns. So Mac Jones had a perfect situation. And to his credit, he took advantage of it, had an historic season. But, you know, how much did that help hide some of his flaws? And that's what NFL teams are trying to figure out throughout this process. But just the fact that, you know, those first two areas, he's aces in those first two areas, and that's going to carry a lot of water with head coaches. And that's why he's often being mentioned as the favorite to be that number three pick to the 49ers.
Why is Justin Fields fading in some people's eyes? What are the traits about Justin Fields that scare people?
I don't know that it's necessarily him fading as it is teams being more excited about some of these other quarterbacks. It's just, you know, these guys are all ice cream flavors where, you know, they're all really, really good. It's just, you know, you're going to have different preferences. People like different things. With Mac Jones, obviously, it starts with the accuracy, the processing. With Trey Lance, he offers something a little bit different with the way he operates. Justin Fields is extremely talented. There's no way around that. Well-strapped together athlete. You know, he moves really well. He's got an accurate stroke down the field. You know, coming from that Ohio State offense, some of it's a little too methodical just in his process, his setup, and the way he delivers. But I think he's a bright individual who is going to be able to speed that up, you know, once he gets into a different offensive system in the NFL. So I think it's just more we have a group of quarterbacks at the top of this draft that is really, really talented. And someone has to go fifth in this group. And so I think a lot of people are, you know, attached themselves to Justin Fields. But someone's got to go fifth. And I don't think it'd be a surprise if it ends up being Fields. Now, where does he end up? That's a really tough thing to figure out. If let's just say Mac Jones goes three, let's say Trey Lance goes four, where does Fields go? Is it you know, eight? Maybe there's some teams that think Carolina's not done throwing darts at that quarterback board. Broncos at nine, the possibility. Do we see the Patriots maybe be aggressive and make a move up? So it's going to get really interesting. Whoever those first four quarterbacks are, it's going to be interesting to see where that fifth quarterback ends up and if there's some trade action in the mix to see where that number five quarterback goes.
So who is the best quarterback that's going to be on the board when the Bears pick at 20, assuming they don't trade up?
Well, I think we can assume that five quarterbacks will be off the board at that point. And at that, you know, it's probably too early for another quarterback, at least in my opinion. I think there's five quarterbacks that you're going to consider in the first round this year, and then there's a gap. Now, maybe not everybody sees that gap, including the Bears. We just don't know. But that sixth quarterback, to me, in my opinion, is Davis Mills out of Stanford. If there's one other quarterback outside the top five who I think has a legitimate chance of starting games in the NFL and competing for a long-term gig, to me, it's Davis Mills, 6'4", 217 pounds, a very loose passer. I think he might be the best middle-of-the-field thrower in this draft, really talented player. He's a former five-star recruit, so if not a huge surprise. But when you look at his resume, 11 career starts. He's got a left knee that he's had problems with dating back to high school, so the medicals will be huge to ultimately determining where Davis Mills is drafted. But when you just look at the traits, he's a big athlete with a smooth stroke. He can make beautiful timing throws. He can layer throws. There's a lot to like about not only what he is now, but once he gains more and more experience, just, you know, trying to determine where that ceiling is. I think it could be pretty high for him. So Davis Mills, I think once we get to the second round, there's going to be several teams interested in Mills. As long as the medicals are clean, several teams are going to be in on Mills and trying to kind of nab him in that second round range.
That next tier of quarterbacks is what is interesting to Chicago Bears fans. What if we told you that Matt Nagy was going to have a much louder voice than Ryan Pace in determining which quarterback they do choose from that second batch? Is there one that is more like a Pat Mahomes dream for what Nagy's offense likes to run than Davis Mills?
Oh, I think if that's what you're looking for in the second round, I think, you know, you look towards Kellen Mond. And that's where I had the Bears going in my seven-round mock draft in that second round. I had them going with Kellen Mond out of Texas A&M, 6'3", 211 pounds. He has mobility. He has a really strong arm, quick feet. You know, he can move around. He's not a statue back there, either by design or on his own. He can throw well on the move. My biggest issue with Kellen Mond is just the inconsistency. Four-year starter at A&M, and there are still times when you watch his senior tape and you're not sure if you're watching a sophomore tape or a senior tape. And so it just depends on, you know, which tape you're watching. If you throw on the Florida tape from this past year, you're seeing a guy who was helping A&M win a beat a Florida defense that, you know, a lot of people didn't think they'd be able to win that game. And he's doing it late in the game with making smart decisions, taking care of the football. But then you throw on the LSU tape and you're seeing him struggle against a defense that was historically bad last year. And just the decision-making process wasn't on point. Some of his throws were not where they were supposed to be. And so it's just it's a matter of consistency with Kellen Mond. He has the talent. He has the ability. And who knows, maybe going to the right situation in the NFL will help iron out some of those wrinkles and make him a more consistent quarterback. That's where, you know, it becomes so tough evaluating this position. It's not like these guys don't have the talent. They all have the talent, but where they land and ultimately, you know, where they end up, that coaching staff in the situation, that helps, you know, kind of clear the way of trying to determine what type of quarterback they're going to ultimately be at the NFL level. So Kellen Mond, you know, he could be that guy in the second round for the Bears.
Dane Brugler is our guest. He covers the NFL draft for The Athletic. He's done a 7-round mock. He's watched film and has scouting reports on over 400 prospects. As you can tell by his answers, he is thorough. He is informed on the draft, which is a week from Thursday. So who do you have the Bears selecting? Again, assuming they stay at 20.
Assuming they stay at 20, I think, you know, you look at a few of these options in that range. It could go pass rusher, it could go corner. I keep coming back to tackle as a possibility for them. And sitting there at 20, Tevin Jenkins out of Oklahoma State, 6'6", 317 pounds, started three different positions at Oklahoma State, but he was at his best, most comfortable at right tackle. He got it done in the run game, got it done in pass protection. There are times where wide speed will give him a little bit of an issue, but he's got very unique power and he is not afraid to show it off. Once he latches on, he will bury guys. He will toss them into tomorrow. Just a really, really powerful dude who can move, doesn't have super long arms, but he can compensate because he's usually on time with his movements, with his steps, with his landmarks. And so there's a lot to like about Tevin Jenkins as being a plug and play right tackle, maybe give the Bears an upgrade over what they currently have slotted on that offensive line.
Dane, I saw that you wrote there's like 12 tackles that you really, really like. Is 20 too high to take a right tackle? Like, does he have to have potential to be a left tackle down the road? And does Jenkins have that potential?
He did start 7 games there over his career at Oklahoma State. So I think that it's fair to say he does have potential. This is just a really interesting offensive tackle class. You know, if you look back at past NFL drafts, history tells us that you better get your tackle early or you're not going to get your guy. This year might be the exception to that because it is a position that stretches into the second and third rounds. Just a very, very deep offensive tackle group this year. So I think it is fair that if you wanted to look at maybe a different position there in the first round, you can at least have some level of comfort that you feel good about who you can get in the second round. Whether that, you know, does a Liam Eichenberg out of Notre Dame, does he last that long? Brady Christensen from BYU is really well-liked. Dylan Radins, North Dakota State. So, you know, it's a position that will stretch. I think if you want to go with, your option A, Tevin Jenkins in the first round, I don't think anybody would bat an eye at that. But I think it is certainly part of the conversation that they could be having at this point, saying, okay, well, you know, maybe you want to go, with a corner. Maybe you want to go with, a playmaker. And because we feel good about this tackle class. We feel comfortable with, a Stone Forsythe in the third round. I think that's certainly part of the thought process. It should be part of the discussion for a team like the Bears that have a few needs, a few ways they can go, and could be able to take advantage of a relatively deep offensive tackle class.
It is a deep draft, and it is a team that has quite a few needs. Is there a receiver that you feel like would be worth the 20th pick of the draft?
Well, first, we have to see if any of those top three would fall. I mean, we didn't think CeeDee Lamb was going to fall out of the top 12, and the Cowboys at number 17 were like, okay, thank you for the gift. Let's see if, could Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle fall to 20? Probably not. Most likely not. It would be a surprise.
If Jalen Waddle is there at 20, I make the pick. That's the new rule.
There you go.
I get to make
the pick.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's screwing that pick up. So that's obviously option A. I think it's kind of a similar conversation that we were just talking about with tackle. Wide receiver is loaded this year, just like it was last year. And spoiler, just like it's going to be next year. It's become that position that every year you're going to be able to find a wide receiver. So I think just on that alone, I'd be looking at another position just because I feel good about who I can get on day two. But if they did want to go receiver on day one and the first three options are off the board, they could go with more of a speed guy, and that's either Elijah Moore out of Ole Miss, Kadarius Toney out of Florida, more of the underneath player, just get them the ball, let them have fun, or a Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota, 6 foot, 190 pounds, more of that savvy receiver, the Keenan Allen mold, who can create his own separation. Not going to be a great yak threat. There's some issues with contested catches, but can create these pockets of separation down the field because he's a savvy route runner. But I would say, you wait to the second or third round and you feel good about your chances of landing a really good player. Second round, you can get a De'Ami Brown out of North Carolina, a Terrace Marshall, LSU. Third round, you could probably get Nico Collins out of Michigan or Tylan Wallace, Oklahoma State. So it's just a loaded wide receiver group that I don't think you need to, take your top guy at 20 when, there are probably some better players on the board.
How about corner, Dane? The Bears let Kyle Fuller go, much to the consternation of some teammates and some fans. But if they go to fill that, is there a worthy pick at 20, or how deep is the class if they want to wait?
Yeah, I think so. And that really, when I was doing my mock draft, it came down to two players, and that was Tevin Jenkins. And then the second one was Greg Newsome, who I think there's a lot of similarities to Kyle Fuller. Obviously, being a Chicago kid, went to Northwestern, a lot of connections there that would obviously make sense. 6 foot, 192 pounds, tested really well, 4.38 in the 40, 6.9 three cone, 40 in the vert. And the production, 25 passes defended. Now, the biggest thing that you worry about with him, well, two areas, 25 passes defended, but only one interception, zero forced fumbles. You want to see him, he gets his hands on the football, but you want to see him create some turnovers as well. And then the second thing, he missed at least three games each of his 3 years at Northwestern. Nothing too serious, more, soft tissue injury, that kind of thing. But it just, it's a physical game. You want to be able to make sure your guy can be out there on a consistent basis. So those are, two areas you worry about. What you don't worry about is when you watch the film and you see this guy, he's a route magnet. The fluid athleticism, the FBI, his football intelligence, really, really outstanding. So I think Greg Newsome belongs in that conversation at number 20 as a strong possibility for, maybe to be that next Kyle Fuller as kind of a cornerstone member of that Bears defense.
Another minute or two with Dane Brugler, covers the NFL draft for The Athletic. What percent chance would you give it that Zach Wilson ends up a better pro than Trevor Lawrence?
That's interesting. That's a good question. You have to look at the landing spots, obviously. Trevor Lawrence going to Jacksonville, which, Urban Meyer, we don't know what that looks like as an NFL coach. And then Zach Wilson going to the Jets, which has been where quarterbacks go to, anguish for however long. It's tough to find success there. But, new head coach, we don't know what that's going to look like. Either way, each one of these guys, you feel like there's a path to success. There's a path to where it might not work out. I still think Trevor Lawrence is there's too much going for him on the field, off the field. Really, the only thing you worry about with Trevor Lawrence is he came in at 213 pounds, which is kind of light for a guy that's almost 6'6". But besides that, you're nitpicking, he has the full skill set of what you want. With Zach Wilson, he's just so exciting. He's a natural ball handler, very, very accurate. He's the type of guy who's never played darts in his life, and he, goes into a bar and he runs the table. Just, someone teaches him how to do it, and he's just a natural. He's just naturally accurate. Off-platform stuff is outstanding. I would be surprised if Trevor Lawrence is not the best quarterback from this group, but I think Zach Wilson, we just kind of accept him as being that number two quarterback or coming off the board of the Jets at number two for a reason. He's the number two quarterback for a lot of teams in this league.
Is Kyle Pitts going to be the highest drafted tight end in history, and does he deserve to be?
Yes and yes. And it reminds me of the Quentin Nelson conversation a few years ago where, can you really put a guard as your best player or your second best player in the draft? Like, you can't do that, can you? And then the more you kind of get over those mental hurdles, it's like, well, duh, yeah, he's the best player in this draft. Kyle Pitts, he's the best non-quarterback in this draft. And once you get over the hurdles of him being a tight end and, oh, you can't do that, or, it's not the norm, once you get past that, it becomes pretty obvious he is the most unique talent and you know, pass catcher, wide receiver, tight end. It doesn't matter. He's a weapon. And down the field, he's just, there's few guys like him. 6'6", 245 pounds, 4.40 in the 40. And that's great right there. But then you turn on the film and it's even better. And he's dusting SEC corners down the seam, getting open. His ball skills are elite. And that's why at number four, the Falcons are going to have a tough decision to make. You take your long-term successor to Matt Ryan with one of those quarterbacks, or do you take the best non-quarterback, and that's Kyle Pitts, add him to that offense with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley? They could have some fun in Atlanta and maybe help them be a contender sooner rather than later. So Atlanta at number four has a tough decision to make.
All right, last thing, because I can't help myself. I know that there will be guys who come out of nowhere over the course of the next calendar year and rise up draft boards. It happens every year. But let's just hypothetically say that Andy Dalton isn't the long-term answer at quarterback for the Bears, and they are still interested in finding a quarterback of the future in next year's draft. Next year's quarterback crop this early looks like what to Dane Brugler?
It looks like a pretty average group, to be honest with you. But we always have, you know, we weren't talking about Zach Wilson at this time last year, the way he's emerged. You know, there are some quality names. Sam Howell from North Carolina, he looks a lot like Baker Mayfield. You know, Phil Jurkovec from Boston College, you know, he's in that Big Ben mold, a big guy. Got a little bit of mobility to him. Keaton Slovis at USC has some fans. Matt Corral from Ole Miss. So there are plenty of names that are going to be on the radar that we're going to be watching this fall. None that stand out as being that generational player, or, you know, no doubt about it, number one pick, but who knows? You know, that's why they're going to play the games. The junior tape will tell us a lot about where these guys end up.
Dane Brugler, you do great work for The Athletic, man. I've been reading you a lot. So good stuff. Draft's a week from Thursday. I know you're busy. We appreciate the time.
Anytime. Take care, guys.
It's Dane Brugler from The Athletic. Something tells me, Spiegs, we'll be talking about 2022 quarterbacks in Chicago. Just a hunch.
Yeah, it's probably a pretty good hunch, and I bet that three quarterbacks are going to somehow end up in the top five. Just because, you know, this is how we roll around these NFL circles. We overvalue, we get excited, we trade up, we see busts, and we forget it from year to year.
I have one request.
Yeah.
No Davis Mills, because everyone here will call him David.
Okay.
No Davis Mills.
Reasonable?
Yes.
Yeah, you people called him Trubisky for a while.
I prefer Kellen Mond, but then people might call him Kelly. No Davis Mills.
Okay.
Mound. Kellen Mound.
Or Mont.
Mont would be.
That Mont guy.
Yeah, that Mont guy.
Good old Mondy.
Yeah. They're drafting a right tackle. Right? That's what's happening here. Because I'll be really surprised. I'll be really surprised if they don't go offense.
They haven't taken a tackle in the first four rounds as a franchise. Haven't taken a tackle in the first four rounds since Gabe Kareemi in 2011. That's the last time they took a tackle in the first four rounds. No wonder you've had some issues at the position.
Yeah, I think that trend stops. And I just think that what they're doing this offseason, they want to shift resources back in the offensive direction to give Matt Nagy a shot. So whether it's a reach on the fourth receiver or it's a tackle, I think that's more likely than Kyle Fuller's replacement. But I do think that there's a real argument that the biggest now hole on the roster is corner. Now, I personally would have no problem with a first-round corner.
I'd be okay with that, too, because then you'd have two very good young ones on rookie deals getting paid cheaply, and Desmond Trufant can really just be, you know, veteran and depth for you. Start early, but maybe not late.
Yeah.
And that's all right.
Yeah, but I think that they're more likely to go offense than defense. So I think there's a really good chance that it's a tackle in that spot. I want to hear from Lucas Giolito, up and down weekend from the White Sox, and we'll get to it. I am I'm ready to break bad on, like, one of the most popular athletes in this city. It's just an infuriating watch. It's all coming up. It's Parkinson Spiegel on The Score. Parkins and Spiegel on The Score. White Sox have already lost today. Some breakfast baseball out in Boston. Cubs had that disaster on Sunday Night Baseball yesterday. Up and down weekend for the White Sox. We'll get to the Cubs a little bit more at 3 o'clock, Speaks, given that the White Sox are the team with actual expectations in this town. I got a lot of thoughts, spent a lot of time with both teams actually on the radio as I was going back and forth from the condo down here to the house and packing and getting ready for this move, which is a whole story in and of itself. I'm so washed up, man. I'm sore. Like I'm sore from like putting together boxes. It's pathetic. I'm the oldest 34-year-old person in the damn world. But what was your top takeaway from baseball on the South Side this weekend?
Well, it wasn't on the South Side.
You know
side,
what I mean. The South Side team. The White Sox. Speaks the White Sox.
God, my top takeaway. But we have to include today, right? I mean,
I guess so.
It was nice to see the sweep of the twin seven-inning bill yesterday. I love watching Fenway. I know some people do not. I saw some of that getting tweeted around, but I love watching the uniqueness of Fenway and you know, Adam Eaton jumping over that wall to make a catch. Kike Hernandez curving a home run around that weird little pesky pole. I love those intricacies.
It's a gimmick, so but it's your gimmick, that. Right? You're biased to that gimmick.
It's longstanding, and there's like, you know, 10, 15 ballparks out there that are all built with these like fake necessities, whereas Fenway is the OG, built with the actual necessities to be that way. But no, I mean, top takeaway for the White Sox, probably Kopech getting a chance to pitch against the team that he broke in with and looking as good as he did and just how good he feels. He said he was ready to go six. If they'd let him, and of course he wasn't going to, but he just wants to go and go and go, and they've gotta put the reins on him and control him and keep him from overthrowing because he wants to get going right now, and he's longer out after TJ than most guys you're seeing for the first time after TJ because of the full skip and the opt out. So this is a very, very healthy arm, looking better than it did pre-TJ and better than most people look the first time you see them after Tommy John.
It was interesting that you called it TJ the first three times. Then you went yes. Tommy John full length for
my
the
last chance
for the fourth mention. Normally, yeah, they would do it the other
chance.
Way.
Right. And it was my last chance to get it in. And I realized I ought to dumb it down just in case I needed to for somebody.
Because we're idiots.
You
work for dumb people.
No.
Work with dumb people during the week.
I wanted to help people who might not have been with me on TJ.
I appreciate that. He was the clear top thing for me, too. I mean, we'll get more information on Lance Lynn. And if Lance Lynn's injury ends up being more serious than they're letting on, that obviously matters a ton, especially because you only have him for the 1 year and he's going to want to get paid this offseason. And you wonder how cautious he may or may not end up being. Tim Anderson being back just makes everything about them feel so much better offensively. But Kopech is so damn talented, man. I was watching him and I was thinking about, like, okay, we know the fastball's ridiculous, but he's harnessing it, right? He wasn't like maxing out and throwing 101. There was a lot of 96 and 97 in there, but late life and movement, and it was nasty. Mm-hmm. The slider at 85 is obscene, and he can seemingly put it wherever he wants. But I was just thinking about his ceiling to me. We know Giolito's, he's thrown the no-hitter. He was third in the Cy Young odds before the year. He is an ace. He is the staff ace, and he's one of the best starting pitchers in baseball, you know, today's game notwithstanding. I'm still not at all convinced that he's got a higher career ceiling than Michael Kopech, because if Michael Kopech becomes that dude, how many people in baseball have a more talented arm than him? Right? I mean, there are better, more accomplished pitchers, obviously, but he's so young and so talented and can seemingly do anything he wants with the baseball now that he's kind of harnessed it in. And like you said, after the surgery, I don't know, man. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he just pitches his way into the rotation and he starts way more games than they expected him to a month ago.
Well, you know, they're going to want to limit those innings. So I don't know if it happens this year. It might, but necessity may have it take place. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Injuries happen, right? Rodon obviously, you know, has the historic day. Cease has dynamic stuff, but now there's the Lance Lynn injury. He is the most talented arm on the team. And if he is able to go that deep, I wonder how long you're going to be able to keep that guy out of the rotation, fully embracing and understanding and advocating for an innings limit. But He started a lot sooner than anybody said he was going to, and it's going to be really hard to take that away from him in the long run.
I think the role looks really smart right now because of the need for that innings limit and because of the whole idea that you want to be playing very important baseball in August, September, and October, and maybe even November. And because he is that weapon, I mean, look who the Dodgers used in their biggest moments in the World Series last year. It was Julio Urias, a guy who was a swing for them, a young pitcher with a history of injuries, but by then clean and healthy. And they used Urias to start every once in a while. They used him in relief, used him for huge innings. You could see Kopech by October feeling confident in any of those roles. And if there's still innings left in the chamber, you unleash him however you need to at that point. So I think they're planning on that, and it's a good thing to have in your back pocket.
What do you think the number is? Because I know they haven't said, but they're like, we're going to be cautious. We're going to be careful. We're going to be smart. He matters long term. His future is as a starter. So Michael Kopech threw, what, 14 big league innings in 2018? 14 and a third?
He's at more than that. More than that.
What is he going to do? What's the cap? Is he going to pitch himself into a Steven Strasburg situation where he's dominant, he looks amazing, but they're pulling the reins in on him, the leash, whatever you want to say,
yeah,
just because it's an arbitrary number that they feel like they need to do?
Well, that was a handshake deal with Scott Boras.
I understand.
That was a handshake deal that then paid off twice with two different contract extensions, though Strasburg is on the injured list right now, but it paid off twice for Mike Rizzo and the Nationals. At this point, no, I don't think it's going to be like that, but look, God, 130, 140 innings, something like that, is your neighborhood. It's funny, I looked at Urias last year, and he threw 55 innings, and what was it, 2.7? 2.7 is what each game was last year. Each game was, it mattered to the 2.7th degree, if you will.
Yep.
So think of the Andrew Friedman plan for Urias, and think of it as, you know, 2.7 times 55. But I would have guessed around 130, 140 anyway along the way. And at this point, that's not going to be hard to keep him from there because they'll use him for 2-3 innings, and then he gets a day off or two, usually 2 days off.
But I guess what I'm saying is, man, okay, it's also 6 innings a start at 20 starts is a way to get to 120 innings. And he is looking like, and as of now, the Lance Lynn injury is short term, and Rodon obviously is going to get plenty of times to get the ball, right? Keuchel is there, Giolito's there, Cease. I understand that right now you don't necessarily need him to be starting every 5 days, but one more thing goes wrong and you very easily could, and he looks like a guy who can do it, and I just wonder what that arbitrary endpoint is. Like, if by June 1st they've got problems in the rotation, are they going to be like, okay, fine, he gets to be the starter? Like, I just wonder how long you're going to be able to hold on to this hybrid version of Michael Kopech when the results are overwhelmingly obvious.
Well, and there's different reasons why you might go to him. The problems with the rotation idea is one thing. They did have the best starting pitcher ERA in baseball before today, or at least in the AL before today. There's that, like if there's problems or injuries, and then there's just the volume of games and that you need somebody. The spot start last night. There's another spot on Wednesday. You know, if Lance Lynn's spot comes up and you've got a necessity, is it Jonathan Stever? Is it Reynaldo Lopez? I mean, they've got guys in Schaumburg who they could plug in and leave Kopech in that spot. I mean, already today, La Russa is answering questions about whether Kopech is going to be in line for the Wednesday start. And he said no, flat out no, based on just a couple of days rest after the Sunday evening go.
Tanny, if he's going to get 130 innings this year, how do you want that to be broken up for Michael Kopech?
Whatever it is to ramp up towards large chunks of innings to start games in September and October. Like, yep. If they have to put him on the shelf for a week at a time here or there just to not use him, because I think ultimately what you're looking at, just from what I've seen over the past couple weeks here, he is more valuable out there, I think, to the club by starting a game as opposed to coming in two innings at a time a couple times a week, because he has so little control on other things that happen in that game. But when he's out there with the ball and he's the guy out there starting for you, he has more control and more of an impact on winning a game than coming out of the bullpen, in my opinion. So I realize there's no playbook here and they've got to be real careful with it, but I would prefer that they ramp him up to be a starter and he can start meaningful innings and not have to all of a sudden pull him away from you at the end of September. So it's going to be really odd how they play it out. There's no right or wrong way to do it. Well, of course, the wrong way would be to have him not there at the end of the season.
Use them all and be on September 1st, be like, and we're done. Boy, we had a good run.
Because we had to. We don't get to this point if it's not for Michael's innings and, you know, May and June starting for us. Like, I would hate that.
Yeah, well, it'd be terrible. But I think if you play in a playoff series, it's – right now, I would say that I want Michael Kopech starting a game in that series. Right over Rodon, over Cease, and then you see with those other guys. Like, he's
certainly over Cease. I give Rodon a chance to prove this to me long term. He's got to prove it.
He's going to get it.
Yes, he is.
But yeah, I'm just saying, my gut tells me that playoffs come around, White Sox are in, you know, one game playoff, obviously that's Giolito. But if they're in a real series and you're lining up four starters for that series, I have a hard time imagining I'm going to want there to be four names in front of Michael Kopech.
I would also like to see Kopech, though, in more spots, more high-leverage situations. And if you're pigeonholing him to opening a game, to starting a game, then you might not be able to see him. You can't see him back-to-back in Game 1 and Game 2 in a position where he might really succeed.
This is absolutely going to be fascinating. And I think at some point transitioning him to a starter so you get used to bullpen life without him down the stretch, if that's what you're going to need and use him for in September and October, is to start key games, you'll have to get used to that. But once those playoffs come, man, I think the ideal scenario is feeling great about Giolito, Lynn, Keuchel, and Rodon, and then Kopech is multi-inning gravy, usable anywhere.
You love this gravy.
I do.
You love the idea of gravy.
It's important.
And I get it.
Super important.
I get it. It's a fascinating story. I've said it all year. I think he's the most interesting baseball player on either side of town because of this very thing, the talent, the decision from last year, and the potential for him. So we'll continue to cover it. But, man, there's just one of the most popular athletes in this city is driving me absolutely insane. I want to discuss it and see if others are agreeing next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.